Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Boat Briefing podcast. My name is Stuart Campbell, Editor-in-Chief of Boat International, and I'm delighted once again to be joined by our Features Director, Charlotte Hogarth-Jones, and Deputy Editor, Caroline White. As usual, we'll be taking a stroll through this week's biggest news from the world of superyachts, and at the end of the pod, we'll hear from Pierluigi Lorapiano, the owner of the 40-meter Supermaxi Maison, which was declared a total loss after falling from a transport ship in May last year. Pierluigi's got a few things to say. It's a fascinating interview.
I'm sure he has. So, Stu, we missed you last week. Tell us about your holiday.
Oh, thank you for asking, Caroline. Well, I was up in Scotland. We spent a few days in Edinburgh with the kids, and then we went to Loch Lomond. But I also made sure to visit the coast. I wanted to go and see a few superyachts. There are a few I spotted up there on AIS, but sadly we didn't clock any. We went to Oban, and Fair Lady's around there at the moment. I love Fair Lady. She's one of my favourite boats. This beautiful 1927 Camper Nicholson's classic. I think she's up on there, up doing some charters up there at the moment. Hyperion is up there too. The famous 47-metre Royal Houseman sailing yacht was originally built for Silicon Valley pioneer Jim Clark. There's Hansa Explorer. She's up there, which makes a change from her usual cruising grounds of icebergs in Antarctica.
Our acting travel editor, Emma Bamford, is up there on that boat at the moment. I'm so jealous. I think Caroline was saying she's seen hundreds of dolphins and is clearly having a gay old time drinking whiskey and traveling around with the EOS crew. So it's good to know they're an amazing trip to do, though, that's very close to home.
You can do a fantastic trip up there, sort of coastal trip, nosing around to various distilleries for whiskey, stopping in, having a dram, getting back on the yacht, going to the next one. It sounds like a very fancy booze cruise.
Quite fun. Upmarket.
Exactly.
I did see that trip come through, and I thought about snagging it for myself, but I thought I'd let Emma have a go. I'm sure she'll do a much better job. But I am also incredibly jealous that she's spending at least a week, right? She's up on
Hatch. Yeah, a few days, I think.
Drinking whiskey and taking the wonderful scenery up there. It really is spectacular.
Well, you'll be able to read her report if you're listening in an issue in a few months' time, I think, in the Voyage section. She'll be giving the full debrief there.
Yeah, have a look for that.
Hopefully not too much whiskey and she can remember how it was.
I should mention quickly that our market intelligence platform BoatPro has won a big award at the DigiDay Media Awards. The BoatPro team picked up the award for best paid subscription product. So massive congrats to those guys. If you haven't seen BoatPro yet, I do urge you to check it out. It truly is a brand new and quite remarkable tool for analyzing the state of the market, spotting superyachts. It has an AIS function, which is just brilliant. I use it every day. So go and have a look at that. So one of the biggest stories of the last week concerned the Fed ship Lady May. Now, Lady May was all over the papers, not necessarily for great reasons. It turns out Steve Bannon, right-wing Svengali and former campaign manager for the president, Donald Trump, was detained while on board the boat while it was off the coast of Connecticut. It is alleged he stole money from a crowdsourced effort to raise money to build a southern border wall. It's never great when superyachts are in the news for the wrong reason, but Lady May, obviously a really, really special boat, winner of various Showboat Design Awards. So she picked up three back in 2015. She's a beautiful boat, originally built for the serial Kiwi yacht owner Neville Crichton.
Well, you can have a look if you want a proper nosy around and you're listening. You can go up on the virtual boat show site on boatinternational.com at the moment. And you can see she's actually up for sale with Moran at the moment. So you can have a proper look around through all the pics and see what she's like inside.
So talking about the image of superyachting, this summer it has been associated rather with a game called Grand Theft Auto online. So you can take on extra missions if you play the game online. And one of them this summer has been a superyacht life, during which you can salvage a wreck, fend off pirates, and sort of chase down people who've been attacking your boat on jet skis and all sorts of slightly dodgy activities. So we'd be really interested to hear from any listeners who've played the game in the last couple of months, because it sounds not particularly related to reality, but quite fun.
It looked cool. You could. I had a quick look around this morning. I'm gutted not to have had a go, but you can choose from a range of different yachts and helicopters and ice class yachts and tenders. So it's quite specific. But it's not the first video game that's had sort of super yacht links. There's in The Sims 4, you could make your own super yacht. You could build your own, like you could build a house, if you remember that from the 90s. So you can see some of them online. You can see what people have created around the world. And some of them are pretty amazing. And there was also, and this is how geeky I am, there was an amazing game for the original, I think, PlayStation or PS2 called Overboard, where you're in a pirate ship and had to rescue various other pirates and less super yachty. But if you're into your games and you like boats, then it was a great game.
It's interesting, isn't it, to see how discover people's perceptions of super yachting, because have it, you know, Grand Theft Auto releasing a mini game, I suppose, called A Super Yacht Life, which... during which various nefarious things happen. And obviously Steve Bannon being arrested on a boat doesn't do great things for the image of yachting. But I suppose computer games based on super yacht reality might be quite boring.
It made me laugh when Caroline said a crime-based video games. I think a lot of video games are crime-based from what I can gather. I don't think many of them are sort of based around daily activities. It makes them more exciting if they're crime-based.
Exactly.
I suppose if the computer game was just following charter guests wandering through towns on the Amalfi Coast, it's not that riveting.
People going to sea bobs.
Crew endlessly polishing stainless steel.
I think that'd be amazing. We should make a real Super Yacht Life, the real version of the game you never got to play.
I don't think that's the way to... we're not going to make our fortune that way, I don't think. So the big news broke on Monday this week that the Cannes Yachting Festival had been cancelled. This was coming really after France introduced new restrictions on gatherings of more than 5,000 people. Obviously, Cannes attracts a lot more than that, and that rather scuppered the whole affair. Organisers of the show, Reed Exhibitions, applied for special dispensation to carry on, but that when that was denied, the inevitable happened. There have been some critical voices in the super yacht industry and beyond saying that the show should have been cancelled long ago, especially after Monaco was postponed. But I won't be adding mine to the chorus, mainly because I was using the show as an amazing excuse to get out of the house. The UK government also imposed restrictions on travel to France, which was causing major difficulties to anyone heading to the show from the UK. Organisers said the cancellation was a huge disappointment. In a statement, they said, "It is with our greatest regret and with some misunderstanding that we are therefore forced to announce the cancellation of the Yachting Festival 2020. Among other measures, a rigorous health protocol had been drawn up, aiming to welcome all participants with peace of mind, all while enabling them to enjoy a quality customer experience." So obviously we knew they were taking the health of the visitors extremely seriously, and they were prepared to implement even more measures. But that wasn't good enough, sadly, so the show was cancelled. So how are companies reacting? Obviously, you know, our inboxes are full at the moment with press calls that will now never happen. Well, a lot of companies are doing it by organising their own micro shows, which was touched on last week in the pod. Now to Swan, Amel, San Lorenzo, Sunseek, all these companies are running client-facing private events this year to compensate.
And we should mention here, I know I keep banging on about our virtual boat show, which we're launching again for the second tranche in September. But in general, there have been a lot of sort of digital versions of different yards and different brokers and things also doing their own online shows. So it seems they're either going smaller and in person or doing what they would have done physically online, which I think has been a good thing for the industry. I think for lots of people, it's kind of given them the push that they needed to be a bit more digitally savvy and engage with people in a digital way a bit better.
Yeah, it's made everyone rethink how they showcase their wares effectively, including us. And it'll be interesting to see how all these little micro shows turn out and whether they have a long-term impact on the viability of these big set-piece boat shows. Because we don't know how long we're going to be living with this for, do we? So, you know, whether Miami next year will get away, whether Fort Lauderdale, that's the big question mark at the moment. Obviously, Fort Lauderdale, the biggest show in the US, a massive centre for boating activity in November in Fort Lauderdale. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Meanwhile, down in New Zealand, all eyes are on organisers of the America's Cup, because with the build-up to the event just a few months away, there have been a few fresh cases of COVID down in New Zealand. And suddenly that's prompted a flurry of headlines about the viability of the Cup. A spokesperson from defender Emirates Team New Zealand said the dates of the America's Cup match were fixed and would not change, but they added the ultimate decision on the America's Cup lies with the defender Emirates Team New Zealand as the America's Cup rights holder. And ACE, the event management arm, continues to look at all event scenarios at all levels and will adapt as required. The mayor of Auckland, meanwhile, has said the situation was highly changeable.
Have we had any kind of updates to you about media attending? Because that's also an issue, right? We can't kind of cover it if we can't get out there. And presumably it's the same for other outlets.
Yeah, that's right. Nothing definitive yet. There has been no decision made on whether they're going to let foreign media into the country. Selfishly, I'm hoping they do. Clearly, what a thing to see. So fingers crossed on that score. But, you know, the entire yachting community is obviously rooting for New Zealand because the America's Cup is such a fantastic event. And whilst, you know, we've covered in previous podcasts the number of super yachts not going to New Zealand this year that we're going to be crossing the Pacific to take part in the event, there are still a really good number of boats going to take part and be present and also race in the Mastercard Super Yacht Regatta. So it will be just, you know, devastating for Auckland, the City of Sail, and all the yacht owners and yachts taking part in that if it doesn't happen. So fingers crossed. So Caroline, I believe we've got some exciting launch and brokerage news. Perhaps you could tell us a bit more about that.
Sure. So the interiors of Lana have been revealed for the first time. Lana was one of the three massive 100 meter plus boats that were launched by Benetti recently. You can go to boatinternational.com to see the photos that have been released, but do bear in mind that the lion's share of the best photos have been saved for us and they will run with our feature, which is scheduled for the January issue of the magazine. So do keep an eye out for that. In other news, Vitters has delivered a 50-meter modern classic called Meraki. Design came from the boards of Hook Design with interiors by Rhodes Young. The owner says that he was seeking the finest Dutch quality, in quote marks. Another modern classic has also been delivered in Turkey this time by Turquoise Yachts, the 56-meter Explorer Blue 2. She was also designed by Andre Hook, working in collaboration with Vickers Studio. She's a tough boat with an ice-classed hull, and she's designed for exploring the Northwest Passage, so not your usual explorer yacht.
I think she's a great-looking boat, Blue 2. I can't wait to have a look around here if we get the opportunity. But, yeah, really classic, timeless lines. And you don't often get that combination. People build explorers to look like explorers, but she's got all the attributes of a really tough boat, but with these classic, elegant lines of yesteryear. I think I love it. I love the concept.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Can't wait to have a look around that one. In terms of some stats for you on how things are going in the industry this year, if we look at September 2019 to August 2020, in terms of launches, we have had 240, which compares to 388 in the same period the year before. So that's a difference of 148. In comparison, looking at deliveries, we've got 293 for the period this year and 375 in the period 2018 to 2019. In terms of new orders, the number is 365 versus 353. So actually a fairly small difference, which is particularly interesting and something that we will hopefully be able to dive a little bit more into next time.
So sales look like they've taken a much bigger hit than the other two metrics. So sales were down quite a lot. But orders particularly, that's really interesting. So they're tracking roughly the same as the same period previously. And obviously, just to explain to everyone listening, so for our global order book data is a snapshot from the end of August one year to the beginning of September another year. That's like the year of the global order book. So that means we can include the data in the January issue after the data stopped counting. I hope that made some kind of sense. So, but for that period, for that kind of September to August period, 2019-2020 versus 2018-2019, the numbers for orders were roughly the same.
Yeah, I mean, that obviously doesn't take account of things like the size of yachts that we're talking about. So there could be a significant difference there. So that's something that, yeah, we will go into more detail when we do the global order book and potentially we could look into more for next podcast.
I'll take any good news we can get at this point. So that's a big good news headline for
me. Absolutely.
Well, it could perhaps be down to a kind of new, younger generation of boat owners. A colleague in the States sent us this study that's been done by a company in Miami that was saying there's been a recent drop in age of buyers, especially in boats and toys at the start of the COVID crisis. So there's a new demographic of people buying, essentially. And for the first time in a decade, the number of new boat buyers under 40 has surpassed the number of buyers over 60. So perhaps some of those younger buyers are kind of making up for losses elsewhere. We need to look into it to know further. But certainly that's something that some of the owners in Florida were saying out last year, that they're seeing a lot more younger owners on the circuit. And it used to be the case that if you saw a super yacht owner, they were always in their 60s, and you can't necessarily say that today. So that's interesting, I thought.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, we should point out that absolutely, I couldn't agree more, but that doesn't include super yacht buyers. That's just the ages of buyers they can track. I think that's mainly smaller boats, but if indicative of the entire market, that's really positive. And I think it's understandable, really, isn't it? When you're locked down and you're somewhere near the water, you can't travel. And if you're in the US, you know, there's very few places you're allowed to go at the moment. So, you know, why not buy a boat?
So as a point to that, it's often the case that people will buy smaller yachts before they work their way up to the super yacht market. So it is relevant if people are getting younger in the smaller yacht market.
Yeah, we're getting people into the boating family younger, which is great because, you know, if they stay in, they every couple of years, they get a few more meters on the hull length, and then sooner or later they're in big boats, and then it's all good news, really. Thank you, Caroline. Some really interesting insights there and some good news, which I think we could all do with a dose of right about now. Now on to our main event, our interview with Pierluigi Laura Piana. First, let me give you a little background to this story. In May 2019, Pierluigi's boat, the 40-metre supermaxi Maisong, fell off its transport ship in heavy weather between Parma and Genoa. The boat and its owner are incredibly well known in sailing circles. He sponsored the Laura Piana Superyacht Regatta for many years and is a man truly and madly in love with the ocean and sailing. I was lucky enough to sail the yacht out of La Spezia a few years ago and wrote the feature for Boat International, which you can find on our website now. In the feature, I called my song the top predator of the racer cruiser species, and that's exactly what she was, the absolute apotheosis of this philosophy. One day a comfortable cruising boat and the next a regatta monster. She was packed with all sorts of tech and ingenuity too, linen composite walls and floors to keep weight down, a retractable drive system, and all sorts of other subtleties and tricks that made her stand out from the pack. She was also, of course, very beautiful. Initial investigations revealed that the cradle holding the yacht on board the transport ship failed in the heavy seas, with the result that Maisong slipped overboard. The loss of the yacht is now the subject of various court proceedings. Pierluigi maintains that the yacht transport company, Peters & May, is to blame for the loss of the yacht, as he makes clear in the interview, and he is now seeking compensation for that loss. Peters & May, meanwhile, deny they are responsible. I reached out for comment on this issue, and they said that while they couldn't provide additional details of investigations into the cradle due to the ongoing litigation, they stood by their preliminary findings, which were that the yacht's cradle, which was owned and operated by the yacht, warranted by the yacht for sea transport and assembled by the yacht's crew, collapsed during the voyage from Parma to Genoa and subsequently resulted in the loss of Maisong overboard. In short, they aren't responsible for the failure of the cradle in their view, as it was owned and assembled by the yacht's crew. You'll hear some other names in this interview. Waco Shipping is one. This is the operator of MV Brattensborg, the ship which had been chartered by Peters and May. I hope that sets the scene. Without further ado, here is our interview with Pierluigi Laura Piana. Just to wind the clock back a bit, if you don't mind, I know it's not a pleasant episode for you, but where were you when you heard the news? And how did you hear the news?
I was in Rome. I was in Rome that day, in Rome, because I was attending an event held by Laura Piana on... For Laura Piana, I was attending an event held by my company and in Rome with my wife and my colleague friend called me and at 8:30 in the morning, and he said that I was expecting. He was telling me that that my son was arrived in Genoa, and he said my son shipped out of the ship, and it's floating or not floating. We don't know where she is. I said, "Are you joking? Today is not the day. Let's. I don't want to joke at 8:30 in the morning." He said, "PG is not a joke." And anyway. It was a very bad news.
Yeah, I can't imagine receiving news like that. I mean, it took a few days before it was, obviously the boat was found, but then it was towed to shore. And it was only when it was ashore that it was declared a total loss. Is that right?
Yes, because the boat never, went down in the water because she was built with composites, and composite do not allow the boat in carbon, full carbon and composite fiber to sink. So at the end, they had to take it to Palma, and there was incredible holes in the hull. No more, everything was destroyed, including there was no more the mast. And quite quickly, my Baltic that built the boat told me that he could repair, but he would never guarantee the boat, and the cost of reparation was higher than making it new. So there was no reason and no sense to try to repair it. So this is why the boat has been quickly declared 100% loss. In fact, it was not 100% loss, because I went to see my son when he was in Parma, and I recouped 17 bottles of good wine. So this is the only thing that I get back.
And what was it like seeing her in Parma in that state? Yeah. Was it just devastating?
Very emotional. Yeah. A picture of my wife walking around in the boat. It was like to see a house, your house, where a bomb has been, exploded into. And it really painful. But, I said my reaction in those days was always that there are worse things in the world today and yesterday of what happened to me. It's probably a question of time and money. So it's okay. Hopefully nobody has been hurt. And this is important, but I think that I want to have my justice.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Not least because this was a hugely personal project. I remember sailing on my song in, it was in La Spezia. I think we did a sea trial in the early days. And she, a stunning boat, but you poured, you kind of poured your life's knowledge and experience into this boat. I mean, it was incredibly avant-garde, very advanced, but it was a very personal project to you.
Yes, it was an important project for me because it was like a challenge of making a big cruising sailing boat be as performant as a racing boat. And I always try to do this compromise. And I think that my song, which was the fifth one, the fourth one, was my ultimate compromise. I love it so much, and we had so much satisfaction. We won the LORC Atlantic race. We did few races, unfortunately, only two seasons, but we had a good position in the bucket. We were quite competitive when we were racing, and I never had such a comfortable boat for cruising with my family. So I was really happy about the results that I got from Baltic and Nauta. Nauta helped me a lot doing the boat, and I was very happy. It took us quite a long time to projecting and to build it, around 4 years, and now probably if I do a new one, I have to wait another 4 years. And time is going, is the only richness that we have, and is going to be short right now at my age.
I think that's what people, that's what sometimes people don't understand. They think, oh, well, it's just a boat. Well, it's not just a boat, because you've poured kind of 5 years into this thing and a lifetime of experience. And if you wanted to do another one, it's another 4 or 5 years. That's a decade of your life gone.
Yes, yes, yes. It's true. But then it was a lot of passion. You know, it's like my hobby. Mm. I never had cars or different kind of things. I always spend my money, passion, they say hobby money, in boating, yachting, and sailing. That happened, as I tell you. Something happened. I don't think that we should cry for years. Let's react and try to do. But the guy who has to pay, because otherwise it's not right. And now I've already, hopefully, my sons, they love sailing, and I went sailing with them again on the MAM 30, and now we bought a Swan 36, and we are planning to race together, and so we will continue to go sailing. It doesn't matter the size or what you want to do. The question is, sailing is in small and big boats. It needs the same passion.
But you do, you are thinking about building again. That is in your mind.
Yes, yes. Let's say, as I said, I like to dream, and when you dream, you are happy and you start. Now, I think that I want to continue to race, sailing, to go some sailing, and maybe with a smaller boat, maybe made just more for racing rather than racing and cruising. I would say that I will find the solution that can be the fastest. I want to make something that make me sailing in the way I like, as fast as possible. So I started with the Swan 36. Maybe we will continue with a bigger boat, a slightly bigger boat, for having good sailing.
Well, I just can't imagine how what it must have felt like to hear that this boat, as special as she was, couldn't be recovered.
Yeah, particularly to see the pictures. When I saw the picture of the boat floating with no mast, basically at the level of the sea, completely full of water, this was really painful, as well as to see the boat coming out of the water in Palma de Mallorca with such big holes in the hull and the deck and the interiors. Terrible. That was really disgusting. Mm-hmm. But, it's okay. You have to accept it. The question is, try to buy time now. And try to leave the sea, the ocean, and the beautiful environment that we have, and try to protect them and do the better things possible.
But, of course, ultimately, you'd like to see some accountability for the loss of the boat. I mean, that's an important part of the equation.
We are at the very beginning of a legal action against Peters & May, because the pandemic has caused a delay in the Italian procedure. It's over a year that I'm working on it. The first hearing has been postponed twice, and it will be held on September 10. So about the English procedure, as of now, Peters & May has filed a claim against me in the frame of an action which has been initiated by Waco, who is not really the owner, but is the company who operates the vessel Battisborg.
Right, and that was the cargo ship that my song was traveling on.
Yes. The situation is, for us, is also towards the insurance, our insurance, Allianz, that Peters & May ask us to do a policy in order to cover all risk. And we made a policy with Allianz, due to the fact that it's an international, well-reputed insurance, a policy all risk, and this policy has been also, or this company, Allianz, has been suggested by Peters & May. So now we are, let's say, the situation between myself and Allianz is still pending, which is a contract that I have with Allianz alone. We are negotiating with them because it took us a long time to really determine who was the responsible and why these accidents occurred. And after 1 year, we are totally sure that the responsibility of what happened is by Peters and May. And then Allianz, now we are waiting the reaction of Allianz, because I think that he should cover the policy that I have issued with them, which was an all-risk policy.
So just to walk it back a little bit, just to be absolutely clear, so you signed the most comprehensive insurance policy available when shipping your boat. It was the cradle and everything, and the mode of transportation was signed off by a third-party company.
Allianz required an independent appraisal in order to let the boat leave Antigua. So the cradle, in fact, was not strong enough to support the movements of a boat in heavy weather conditions. But and not only the cradle, also the lashing was made in the position. I would say the preparation of the boat was totally insufficiently made, and that was the responsibility of Peters and May. He is the shipper, he is the carrier. I'm not a carrier. I just gave them the cradle in order not to ruin the hull of the boat. But then, how strong or what they have to do to cross the Atlantic is their job. It's not my judgment, not even my job, my responsibility. I just paid the bill for that to Peters and May and to Allianz in order to have my boat safe back home in the Med.
But Peters and May, they claim they are not responsible because am I right in saying that they say it's the crew's responsibility, your crew's responsibility?
Not at all. How can a crew be responsible of damages during a shipping? A shipping which is not anything related to the crew. My crew gave them an help in Antigua, an help to build the cradle in order not to accumulate more delayed days that they have already had, Peters and May. So my crew doesn't have any responsibility on that.
But meanwhile, the case continues, or it's been delayed, obviously, but you want the entire case moved to Italy from London?
Yes, let's say that we would prefer, but it's not... we would prefer how can we say? First of all, because we did it first, before Waco. Second, for logistic reasons, it's very easy to understand that an Italian consumer that make a contract with an Italian company, because we sued Peters and May Italy, with which we made the contract. Mm-hmm. If we have a problem, we sued them in Italy. Then let's see what the judge will say. If the Italian judge will say that our case has to be followed in England, we will go ahead in England.
Okay. But at the moment, there's almost two parallel legal claims going on. So there's the case ongoing in London and your attempt in Italy to move it all there.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
But conceivably, wherever this ends up, whether it stays in London or the case moves to Italy, this could be another, 12 months of legal wrangling before you get any kind of result.
Yeah, you're right. But we did because we filed the case before everybody in Italy. I think we have to, probably after the 10th of September, this problem will be resolved. I don't see a huge difference to be judged by English law, by English judge or Italian judge. Mm. Personally, I think that what is right in Italy as well as in England. So I have no fear about that.
Yeah.
But obviously, the cost for myself to run a file in a case in England or in Italy, since I have already started in Italy, will be much more expensive.
Well, I hope it ends positively. Yeah, because
me too.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems
I will never be so positive because I cannot get my song back. But at least what is due, I hope it has to be paid. So, and then I will try to do a nice sailing boat, enjoyable and a good passion for sailors like you.
Excellent. Well, yeah, I know she'll be a stunning boat. Pierluigi, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Bye.
Well, that's it for this week. I hope you enjoyed this week's Boat Briefing podcast. If you did, don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye.